When Donald Trump says women should be punished, or Mexicans are rapists and criminals,
I'm telling
or John
you.
McCain's not a hero, he is showing you who he is.
Senator, you whipped out that Mexican thing again.
Can you defend it?
He also said, and many of them are good people.
Wells Fargo's predatory and illegal banking practices require a strong response. Wells Fargo is a big financial player in Illinois, and I hope to send the message that their unscrupulous practices are not welcomed and will not be tolerated.
Here in the U.S., we're teaming up exclusively with Verizon to bring Pixel to the market. Pixel starts at $649. It's available for pre-order starting today.
His tax returns that showed he went through a very difficult time, but he used the tax code just the way it's supposed to be used, and he did it brilliantly.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. No, wait, it's Wednesday. Is it Thursday? It's Wednesday. It's Wednesday, October 5th, 2016. I'm having wishful thinking, right? It's kind of been a long week, it seems like. The week is kind of dragging on. You know, you hit this point on Wednesday where you kind of wish it was Friday. That's sort of where I'm at. I don't know about you, but hopefully the rest of the week will speed by. We've got lots to talk about today, including worker health. It's more about your workplace, the people that you work with, more than the donut table at work. We're going to introduce you to the new UIC Center for Worker Health coming up. But first, let's get you caught up on some of the intel that's happening around the globe and from the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. First, on the markets. Dow futures are pointing toward losses this morning when the opening bell rings. The Dow futures off 16 points. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are off just a bit as well as we head toward 8:30 this morning. In Europe overnight, generally a negative night. The FTSE, the DAX, the CAC all lower by almost a percentage point. And in Asia overnight, mixed markets there. The Nikkei up, the Hang Seng up, the rest of the markets generally lower as we move into this Wednesday. Lots going on around the world in terms of technology. You heard a couple of clips there from the opening segment. The new Google phone has been introduced. We'll see how the Pixel hits the market, whether people are excited over it. There sure seemed to be a lot of excitement at the Google event yesterday. Also this morning, we're watching developments out of England where the deputy governor of the Bank of England says companies who are getting ready to deal with the uncertainty of the UK decision to leave Brexit may have more problems ahead of them than they really realize. At one point, telling an interviewer today that the lack of clarity around Brexit could see companies delay major spending decisions as they choose to keep their options open. Also, the governor, Ben Broadbent, said that the end result of this could be insidious, in his words, for the economic output of the UK and the future going forward. Concerning words today from the Bank of England deputy governor. We'll watch that story and as well the rest of your money as we move into this Thursday. A couple of other stories happening that we want to let you know about. A series of economic reports due today. The biggest of those will be the Commerce Department's latest trade data. Later, factory orders will come in as well. The Institute for Supply Management will have its service sector index out today. Yesterday, the International Monetary Fund released its new global snapshot for the world, and the forecast for the U.S. is not as good as it could have been, and is much lower than the Fed. The IMF yesterday cut its estimate for U.S. economic growth in 2016 to 1.6%. That's down from the 2.2% it had predicted just back in July. The American economy grew 2.6% rate in 2015. That could obviously have problems with the markets as well when they open up later today. This morning, we're also keeping a very close eye on Hurricane Matthew. Airlines are letting passengers now change travel plans without penalty if their trip might be affected by Hurricane Matthew. This includes some flights to the Caribbean. They're also keeping a very close eye on the southeast United States as we move into the end of the week. This could come ashore over the weekend in the Carolinas. The University of Illinois at Chicago School of Public Health has received a $4.2 million five-year federal grant to study health, work, and worker health. It's funded by the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. It's the Center for Healthy Work. and it's open now at UIC. Joining us this morning is the new director of that center, Lisa Brousseau. She's with us on the line from UIC this morning. And Dr. Brousseau, give us a sense of what the mission of the UIC Center for Healthy Work will be and where you're going from here as you start off on this mission for this center.
So this is a new center that was funded by the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, called NIOSH, and we titled it the UIC Center for Healthy Work. It so NIOSH funds these centers of excellence for total worker health. They have been funding them for about 15 years. And when they opened up the announcement for new centers and competing, the centers that had been funded got to compete. A number of us in the School of Public Health got together and began to talk about how our research focus sort of crosses over between health prevention and health disease prevention and health promotion, which is what total worker health is focused on. It's to improve people's health at work, but the issues are both health as impacted by hazards and the nature of work itself, as well as one's environmental factors that impact on one's health outside of work, which result in things such as poor behaviors, poor eating behaviors, lack of exercise, smoking, some of these other things. And for the past few years, we've been working on the large number of people who are now employed in jobs that are considered precarious. And I use that word very broadly. It can be people who are who have temporary jobs, people who have contingent work, people whose jobs do not guarantee that they will be able to return to them, the next day, and also relatively low wage kinds of jobs.
We'll get into some of that. Want to hit on a few of the things you brought up there. On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, here's some stocks of local interest this morning. UAL shares are about 0.5% higher pre-market this morning. Sears trading lower this morning. Shares just about 0.5% lower. Also this morning, Boeing shares are trading up almost 1% pre-market.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Stocks were dragged down by utilities and phone companies yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average fell 85 points to 18,168. The S&P 500 lost 11 points, and the Nasdaq Composite was 11.5 points lower. The International Monetary Fund is downgrading its forecast for the U.S. economy this year, and it warns that political discontent stateside threatens global growth. The fund's dimmer outlook comes even as the Federal Reserve is thought to be preparing to raise interest rates in December. Airlines have begun letting passengers change their travel plans without penalty if their trips might be impacted by Hurricane Matthew. American Airlines, Delta, and United are all waiving change fees for certain trips to and from Florida and the Caribbean. And Google has introduced a new line of smartphones called Pixel, as well as other gadgets, in an aggressive challenge to Apple and Samsung. The new devices are designed to showcase the company's digital helper called Google Assistant. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program, 522. It's called the UIC Center for Worker Health. The director, Dr. Lisa Brousseau, with us on the opening bell this morning. Before the break, we were setting the stage for the work of the UIC Center for Worker Health. And Dr. Brousseau, as we continue our conversation this morning, if you could give us a sense of just how significant the work of the center is going to be in terms of dealing with the problems that workers face every day.
I don't know if we know the answer to that question. Those of us who work in the occupational health and safety field believe that it is a very significant feature of one's health. And it isn't just the fact that you have there's the basic fact that you have a job which pays a wage, which means that you can buy the things that you need. You can live in a place where you're, that's yours, that's safe. You have access to transportation and food and and a number of things that people without livable wages do not have. So the single factor of having a job is a huge has huge impact on your on one's health. Then the nature of that job, and we do know something about jobs that are for in which you have less control over what you do, are less healthy than those jobs where you. And so, when we talk about stressful jobs, one often thinks, well, executives, for example, must be very stressed and their jobs must be very difficult. But executives actually have a lot of control over what they're going to do, and, you know, day to day, hour to hour. Whereas someone whose job is working on an assembly line, for example, or in a, you know, a contingent kind of job, has very little control over what they're going to do hour to hour, day to day. And their jobs are actually much more stressful and much less healthy than an executive's job.
And so if a worker does try to get healthy, there might be certain conditions at their work that prevents them from doing that. What would those conditions be?
Well, in addition to not having access to basic benefits, there's, you know, I did a study with an investigator at the University of Minnesota. We were trying to do an intervention in small businesses that would improve, would give more information and access to smoking cessation products and helping people quit smoking. And what we found is even having access to many of the workers in small manufacturing companies in particular was very difficult because their jobs don't allow for them to have time off. They are given very short breaks in the morning, a short break in the afternoon. Many of them take unpaid lunchtime, and that's completely acceptable in our, you know, in under our laws. That unpaid lunchtime is not something they're going to spend listening to somebody tell them about smoking cessation. It's the time they're going to spend smoking, if they smoke, outside, or having lunch. But the other problem, so that's just smoking. If you have a very short break and no paid lunchtime, you're not going to have the opportunity to access, you know, nutritious food on if it's not provided on site. And if you've ever tried, if you've ever seen what's in the vending machine at most places, including where you probably work, 90% of that is not, has no nutritional value. It's not healthy food. And so that's another problem with work, is that your access to healthy options is very limited. And then, as I said, the control over your work is very limited. And if a small business is very unlikely or less likely than larger businesses to offer medical benefits, and when that happens, it means you don't do the preventive medicine things that you should do. You don't get vaccinations. You don't go to the dentist. You don't get a checkup periodically. You don't get your blood pressure monitored. And as you get older, those things become more and more important. Not that we're necessarily sicker, but we're more prone to just, you know, certain conditions. So all of those things are much harder for people who are in precarious employment.
So the UI Center for Healthy Work, you hope to collaborate with communities. You want to partner with communities, and you want to focus on a couple of neighborhoods in particular. Tell us about the collaboration and why you've selected, what neighborhoods you selected and why.
I should have a disclaimer here that I'm the center director. There are a whole bunch of investigators working on this center, so I don't want to portray the work of the research project group that is headed up by Dr. Jenny Hebert-Bairn and Dr. Lorraine Conroy. And Dr. Hebert-Bairn in particular has been working in South Lawndale for a number of years doing what we call community-based participatory research, where she's trying to work with the community to identify those things that are important to them that impact their health, and then working with them to identify interventions or actions or activities that can bring about improvements in their community's health. And we involved her in this center because one of the things she realized as she's been doing this for several years, as she's been analyzing her data, is that a lot of it the input from community members was around the issues of work, having work, the nature of work. And that wasn't a determinant of health, so to speak, that she had focused on previously. But in her interactions with Dr. Conroy, who's an industrial hygienist like I am, she began to understand that, or began to think that maybe work was an important determinant of health in the context of that community, and it should be explored more. And the community has been welcoming of that idea. So they have not quite worked out exactly what they're going to be doing, but a lot of it, this community-based participatory research, is that you formulate your questions and your data gathering in collaboration with your community.
Lisa Brousseau, the new director of the center, UIC Center for Healthy Work at the University of Illinois Chicago, with us this morning, the new director of that agency.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program, 539 on our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. How would you like to travel the world, follow your passion, do what you love best, especially if you're an actor, filmmaker, director, editor, other creative type? There are some people doing that right now, and they're having a really good time at it. It's called Create Abroad, and one of the organizers behind this is with us this morning, actually this late afternoon in Japan. Henry Snow is with us. Konnichiwa, Henry Snow.
Hi, Steve. It's great to be here.
Good to be with you. I guess it's, 7:30 there in Japan where you're at?
Exactly. Yeah, it's 7:30. It's rainy, but it's nice.
Yeah.
Nice and warm.
So this is a wonderful idea. I wonder if for our listeners who may not be aware of it, tell us exactly what you're up to.
Right. So what we're doing is essentially we're organizing communities of YouTubers and filmmakers and video content creators who travel to different places with us together. And we work with brands or airlines, hotels, and other businesses to essentially create a narrative, create a story for their organization. But the main point is to get a community of YouTubers, people who make YouTube videos together, and work and travel and just have a good time as well.
Now, the YouTube part of this is the glue, I guess, that holds this all together. Why YouTube?
I think, and right now, especially among young people under 35, YouTube is the most watched platform in the U.S. over cable television, over all the networks, and it's only growing every year. So it's a great platform to create independent content. For example, you don't have the big studios, you don't have curators for your content. All you need is a camera, a microphone, and you can become popular. You can work for yourself. It's a sort of it's an entrepreneurial thing.
And it has become one of those places where people are now demanding fresh content, not in a bad way demanding, but they want to see fresh content, stuff that you and your colleagues are probably providing. With the world as sort of your seashell here, how do you pick where you're going to go and what you're going to do? It seems like you just have the world to choose from.
Well, it depends on who we're working with at the moment. In Japan, it's more of an experimental trip. We're just gathering a small community of YouTubers, and everybody has their own little sponsors. Some are working for the Japan Tourism Board, promoting, you know, ahead of the 2020 Olympics. Others are promoting their own businesses. But in general, you know, on our phones, video is the number one most influential, you know, platform that people watch, you know, more than photography, more than writing. So it's only growing every year, and we want to get into it.
So how do you make money doing this? Do you make money doing it? And how, if so, can you make a living doing this?
On YouTube, yes. It's certainly tough. A lot. It's there's more competition every day, but it's a growing industry, and people, if they want to, they can make a living. And with Create Abroad in general, what we do is we facilitate a community and a sponsor. And then on top of, a YouTuber making revenue by themselves, we have a group of people who can collaborate and have fun and travel while working at the same time. And that's sort of the environment we want to promote, because remote working is becoming a big trend.
It's one of those things that I don't want to put upon sort of my analysis of what I've seen, but it seems to me that the bigger part of this is getting a foot in the door in this area, and also having the sort of the freedom to be creative in a number of different places, and also maybe you're attracting the people who are just getting into this industry, this creative industry.
Well, we're working with whoever our a sponsor, for example, the Japan Tourism Board, is interested in working with. So at the moment, it's more established people who make YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. But it's exciting. It's growing. We're thinking of, going to Chicago, going to different places, maybe expanding more. But at the moment, it's such a new thing. And I do want to get into remote working a little, because that's, in my opinion, is where our economy is headed. If you're, for example, a web developer in Chicago, working in an office, a lot of people, especially millennials, are, they can negotiate with their bosses to work remotely, or, have at least a few days a week where they can work from anywhere. And this is sort of what the YouTube community does as well. So why not go to a different country, especially one that's cheaper, and work from there?
Yeah, you bring up a good point. It's I don't know if I asked my boss if I could work remotely from Japan, if he'd allow that, but it's certainly worth a try. It is, but you're right. It is becoming the new thing, and it is a major thing for millennials, especially. They want to have that freedom. And tell us about where you think it's going in terms of that aspect of it. Is it going to be huge? Is it going to be bigger than any other perk that might come along with our work?
I think with the millennial values, especially, we want to be more independent. We know we value experiences more than material possessions now, and travel is a huge experience, right? And it's just such a life-changing experience for anybody involved, especially as a group. You get more creative when you go to a different country, when you see things. And I guess my advice is for somebody starting off remote working is to go to a cheaper destination. Like Thailand right now is a huge remote working hub, especially Chiang Mai, the northern city in Thailand. There's thousands of people who call themselves, quote, digital nomads and work remotely from co-working spaces there. Their living expenses are about $500 a month, maybe $1,000 a month, and they make the same salary they do in the U.S. So I think this is sort of where millennials are interested in heading.
And I think if you ask some of the older business types who do a lot of international travel, this is where I think the common ground is with millennials, because they'll tell you that some of the best experience and the most important experience they've received is with their international travel. You're seeing how other cultures operate, see how other business worlds operate. It's a huge deal, isn't it? Is it not?
It is, it is. And there's so many different business cultures. Japan is a very different business culture. But the number one thing, in my opinion, is it promotes creativity. So if you have a group of people who come together to a new country and experience the same, small things like using the bathroom, going to the store, it makes you creative and think of new ideas for your business or for your job.
Henry, I wonder if you could talk to us about how important YouTube is going to be as we move forward. We're already seeing it, as you've already indicated. It's a big place for people to go for content. How big of a player is it going to be as we move forward into the next decade?
I think now there's YouTube Red. They make their own, they fund their own shows like Netflix. And there's Facebook is getting into the video field. They're making their own video platform. I think it's going to be the biggest entertainment platform in a decade. by it's like radio, you know, TV, social media. I think it's going to be the next one.
And it's important, too, that it kind of remains inexpensive as a place to get content, too, right? I mean, I know that doesn't probably help
right.
those of you who are trying to make money in it, but it's that's another part of it.
Right. I mean, that's the advertising model. The more views a channel gets, the more money they make.
So if somebody's on the edge thinking about joining a creative abroad, what would you tell them? Just jump in, the water's nice?
I would say we would love to hear advice or work with any filmmakers or video content creators out there. And for future trips, we're also still organizing future trips for 2017. And we're looking for different companies and businesses to work with around the world. So how we do it is we first scout out the businesses, such as the Japan Tourism Board. And then we run applications and accept a small group of people to join us in these destinations.
Well, best of luck to you. Hopefully we can stay in touch with you and see how things go. But it sounds like you're living the life.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. If anybody in Chicago does have any advice or questions for Create Abroad, please tweet us at Create Abroad or visit our website. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Henry Snow with us. You can, by the way, follow at Create Abroad, as he said. You can also check them out online at createabroad.org. Henry Snow with us today, one of the founding forces behind Create Abroad.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 5:53 on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are pointing negative, off about 16 points. The NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower as well. Crude oil's trading up this morning, though, almost a 2%, almost a buck a barrel at $49.56. So that's at least some good news. Let's find out the latest on commodities, other commodities, and also agriculture this morning. And joining us, Orion Samuelson. Good morning, Orion.
Well, good morning, Steve. The grain market overnight trading in a very small trading range, and it's a mixed market with the wheat market trading down about half a cent, the corn market trading down a penny, soybeans are trading a penny higher. The U.S. Department of Agriculture yesterday announced that it will pay farmers more than $7 billion this fall, keeping them afloat in the face of the low crop prices we have seen now for the past year and a half. Payments have started going out to growers of corn, soybeans, and other crops who had enrolled in the U.S. safety net programs to protect themselves from market downturns covering harvests last year. That $7 billion will account for about 10% of what the agency has projected for U.S. net farm income for 2016. Meanwhile, as the harvest continues, the crop seems to be getting better. A brokerage firm, FC Stone, yesterday raised its estimate of the average U.S. 2016 soybean yield to a record 52.5 bushels per acre. That's up from the 50.1 bushels per acre in the previous monthly report from FC Stone. The firm raised its soybean production estimate to 4,357,000,000 bushels. And we're heading for Madison, Wisconsin this morning. It's the second day of the World Dairy Expo. And yesterday, a 6,900-pound cow carved from Dakota mahogany stone was given a permanent home outside one of the pavilions on the World Dairy Expo grounds. It's a new addition. We look forward to seeing it today, and we look forward to seeing a lot of you at Madison. So have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Have some ice cream for me.
And a grilled cheese sandwich.
Oh,
because
exactly.
They make the best ones up there.
And
so
do they actually give out the recipe, Orion, for those?
Yeah, I think it's basically simple, but the Dairy Science Club at the U of W does it very well.
Yes.
It's become a tradition in the 50 years of the show.
Some of the best grilled cheese you'll ever eat in your life.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Orion. Safe travels, by the way. 5:56 now on the WGN Associated Bank Daybook for today. Here are some of the things that will likely drive the markets as we move forward. A handful of reports, but a couple of big ones. The Commerce Department releases international trade data later on. Factory orders update placed in August. Orders placed in August. The Institute for Supply Management is also out with the service sector index. So we'll see Yum Brands report quarterly financial results later on after the market closes. You probably eat some of the Yum Brands in your kitchen. There are probably some in your pantry right now. That's a big one that could drive markets. Earnings, quarterly earnings from Yum Brands after the bell later on today.